we will get the result. And what is that result? Krishna says here at the end of Bhagavad Gita, those of you who know the history, well, not a crying baby, but we're getting there. You have Krishna, and I don't want to blind you with this, Prabhu. Are you in range of this? Of course, you have Krishna, who takes the role as the supreme teacher. And you have Arjuna, his devotee, who takes the role as the perfect student. Prabhupada said to one time that not only do we not know the right answers, we don't even know the right questions. So Arjuna takes that role and asks on our behalf. And you know the story. I'm assuming most of you know the history. And I shouldn't say story because it's factual. That Arjuna was overwhelmed with the forces facing him. As any thoughtful person in this world will sometimes feel overwhelmed by duty, responsibility, opposing forces, what's moral, what's good, what's true, what's permanent, what's in my best interest, what's my social duty. All of these things, any thoughtful person becomes bewildered at some time. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, there's one crying baby. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, you see here, is the result. Why should you be interested in this topic? Wherever there's Krishna, the master of all mystics, wherever there's Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. These qualities, opulence, victory, extraordinary power, morality, these are all things that lead to a virtuous, satisfying, meaningful life. These are valuable things. So, and from being completely overwhelmed and frustrated and bewildered and morose, Arjuna came to this point by understanding the science of pure consciousness as explained in Bhagavad Gita. So it's a worthy goal. How does it work? How do we get there? You are here. How do we see the world we live in? The Polynesian islanders used to believe that when they rowed their canoes, their little dugout canoes, the canoe was stationary and they were pulling the world past them. A little coconut wine, I think, probably was, enabled that concept. But the point is, what a ridiculous idea. You follow? The canoe is stationary, just like you pull a rug. I pull the world past me. And yet they were able to sail all the way to Peru. They sailed thousands of miles and back with a completely wrong concept. So we see that everybody sees the world. We all have a certain way we see the world. But have we ever really what is that based on? Prabhupada liked this example. Seeing may be believing, but is it really knowing? And the example is you have three blind men who grab hold of an elephant. And one will wax eloquently how he's got a hold of the leg. And he'll tell you in so many ways how he's holding onto a column. Another man will have the trunk. And he'll tell you convincingly how he's holding onto a hose. Another person will have the tail. He's got a brush. Each of them is correct to a certain degree. Each of them is wrong to a certain degree. So just seeing is not necessarily knowing. Anyone here ever take apart a kaleidoscope? I did. Don't worry. No one's going to bust you, But if you take apart a kaleidoscope in the ultimate issue, it's simply three mirrors shaped like a, triangle. And then there's a glass lens, and then there's some plastic, little pieces of, whatever. It's just pieces of paper. And yet that combination can create like a beautiful stained glass window, isn't it? It looks myriad patterns of profound complexity and beauty. You open the thing up, it's just three mirrors and some little trinkets. So we're seeing this world, and we have what is good, what is right, what is true, what is valuable. But what's it really based on? It's based on these little concepts floating around in our head. Bhagavad Gita. Whoops. These are five elements of reality, just like you have the mirrors, which are like the three modes. We'll get to that in a minute. And the little pieces of glass, the composite of those elements creates a view, what you see in the kaleidoscope. Bhagavad Gita says, this is how a wise person sees the world. These are the lenses. You know, when you go into an ophthalmologist or an eye doctor, and they're testing your eyesight, and they put all the different lenses in front, and ultimately you get a combination that gives you a clear picture. What are the lenses that give a clear picture of this world? These are the Vedic cornerstones, pillars, lenses, through which we can understand the world truly and properly. And these are laid out by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Jiva is the living entity. Kala is time. Prakriti, material nature. Karma, work, action, and reaction. And Ishwara, the supreme controller, Krishna. So we're going to go through these quickly, just so you have a full picture. Jiva is the living entity. We're not black, we're not white, we're not old, we're not, you know, all this. You can see here, we're the eternal living entity that is going through all these transitions. The body changes, but the soul remains constant. We all know the example. That's Jiva. That's who we actually are. Krishna gives a very good example, fantastic example in Bhagavad Gita. Body's the carriage, horse is the senses, mind the reins, intelligence the driver, and soul is simply the passenger. So you see here the senses. Nike says just do it. If you let the senses just, we've all seen enough cowboy movies or Mahabharata when they got the chariot. If you let the horses in the chariot just run, drop the reins and let them run, what happens? When I was a kid, they used to say, you're cruising for a bruising. So if the senses, this is such a good example, that we are actually, this is just the body is the carriage, senses are the horses, mind, that's the reins, intelligence is the driver, and the soul is the passenger. If the intelligence doesn't have a hold of the reins of the mind and direct the horses, then the body, the carriage, is going to go right off a cliff. So that's who we are. Why does it matter that we know we're not this body? Because when the mind and the senses and the ego come up with a bright idea, the intelligence, spiritual intelligence, the next door neighbor of the soul, Srila Prabhupada said, the spiritual intelligence says, whoa, wait a minute. Is that really who we are and what we want? I was sitting, it's a long story, but the short version. I was sitting by a small pond and there was a frog. You ever seen a frog how they can shoot their tongue out and catch insects? This frog was on a roll. He was like, you know, this one, that one, upside, you know. He was really, and then a bee came along. Bzzz. He didn't distinguish between he was so much into it. I don't know what the frog's mentality was, but he appeared to be so much into it. Whoosh, shot his tongue out and pulled in a bee, which immediately bit him. And you watch this frog go through all these changes. We're just, you know, what is it? Stimulus response, stimulus response, stimulus response. But where does the intelligence say, whoa, wait a minute. So if one has this picture in one's mind, when the, you know, visions of sugar plums start dancing in the head, that this is a bright idea, the intelligence based, infused with spiritual knowledge should say, wait a minute. Is this really in my best interest? Me, the soul. Next factor is kala. Time and tide wait for no man. We should, all of us know, but it's, the Vedic time is so excellent. It covers, it's described in the Bhagavatam, Bhagavat Purana. You know, if you ever been, you know, a ray of sun will come in a window and you see those little dust particles, some of them actually float up. There's a name for that which slips my mind. It's an Anu, but I forget the exact name of it. Druda Karma would know, he's up there. But the amount of time it takes the sun to cross over that tiny, you know, it's forget nanosecond. It is a small portion of a nanosecond. So Vedic time measures that small, and it also measures the breathing in and out of Mahavishnu, which the entire existence comes out with one breath and comes in with the inhale. So from such enormous time spans to small time spans, the Vedic concept understands time. But the basic principle is everything. From our physical body to social structures to cultures to nations, growth, maturation, culmination, decline, and death or dissolution. Everything is going through this. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, time I am. So we should remember that everything is under the influence of time. Kala. Prabhupada called it king time. It's just for fun. Time and tide wait for no one. Prakriti is the material nature, this stuff, the stuff we experience. So the materialists, they see, you know, the periodic table, you've got the elements, that's what matter is. But the Vedas have a much more refined picture of it. Not crying, but there's a second baby. Three modes of material nature: sattva-guna, goodness; rajaguna, passion; tamaguna, ignorance. Everything is seen through these. Everything in this world is influenced or controlled by these three modes. And a simple example is if you take yellow, red, and blue from these. If you're a painter, now they've got, you know, with computer science, it's a different way of doing things. But in the old days, you could mix, and you still can, yellow, red, and blue from the combination of these three colors. What kid is that? No offense, but Hare Krishna. Because we want attention. This is actually serious stuff. Yellow, red, and blue. These three colors can create all the colors in the rainbow. So we are influenced by these three modes, and we should know how they work. Just like you see here, from a combination of red, yellow, and blue, you can create all the colors in the rainbow. It says in the Bhagavatam that there are 400,000 different types of human species. Now, this used to be a doubt in my mind. I knew it was in the Bhagavatam. I accepted. And what freed me from this doubt was visiting Venice Beach. Anyone who's been to Venice Beach, you will see every possible type of consciousness. Different states of desire and awareness and consciousness. So all of us fall somewhere in this combination of the modes of nature. Well, I said you are here. Diagnosis of a disease is 90% of the cure. If we understand these things, if we understand where we are and where we want to be, we can understand how to get there. That's where we're going here. So that's another element, material nature. A little more about the modes. You've heard this saying, we've all heard, seeing the world through rose-colored glasses. The same object, yellow, red, and blue. Same object experienced different ways according to the modes. This is a simple example. Suppose, you know, I see some so-called beautiful girl. Not me. Let's just take Exhibit A. See some beautiful girl. Hey, don't I know you from somewhere? You know, whatever. You know, he thinks, oh, here's some beautiful object for me to exploit. If I'm a tiger, I think, hey, something to eat. Tasty morsel. Isn't it? I think even some joggers out there, you know, the cougar, mountain lion will jump on them, you know? So they're not thinking beautiful girl. They're thinking, oh, like if we saw samosa going down the road. Oh, very tasty, you know? So, and someone in the mode of goodness thinks, this body is whatever it is. This is spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna. Let me offer, you know, Pandita Samadarshana. A pandit sees everyone as equal. So, same object, according to the modes, experienced completely differently. And we're all doing that. We have to go quickly. But I think you've got the point. Karma, action and reaction. Every other body in motion. The whole principle of science, it's a bit of a dichotomy because they say the world is irrational and happening by random chance. And yet we're assuming that there's laws, that there's rationality upon it. I mean, you can say we impose rationality on it. You know, we think that it goes by rhyme or reason, but it's actually chaos. But the fact of the matter is we have laws of chemistry, laws of mathematics, laws of physics. We're also bodies in motion. There's laws that control us. They're just more subtle. So this is explaining for every action, there's a reaction. We all know the principle of karma. Here's somebody, you know, eating anything and everything, and you see the result. Fine, get a body for that. Become a tiger. You know, whatever you want to do. You want to sleep all day? No problem. Become a bear. If you don't use your eyes, if you're living in a cave, nature compensates. You get radar and you lose your eyesight. Whatever, this refined consciousness is meant for understanding. Prabhupada said, man is the rational animal, and that rationality begins when one asks, who am I, where have I come from, where am I going? If you don't use the advanced human consciousness for this, nature won't give it to you. Nature doesn't waste. So we understand karma. This is the big question. Why do bad things happen to good people, and why do good things happen to bad people? If you have a silo, grain silo, so let's suppose for one harvest, they put in corn, right? Picture a tier. So this is corn up to here. Next harvest, they put wheat on top. next harvest, they put oats on top. So if I'm a know-nothing, and they have a spout at the bottom, I'm standing here, I see they turn on the spout and corn is coming out. And yet I see that they're putting wheat in the silo. And if I have no idea the history, I'm thinking, ah, it's a magic silo. Just see, wheat goes in and corn comes out. But the fact of the matter is, whatever we've done in the past, you know, went into this karmic silo. Whatever's going in now will come out in due course of time. It's a very simple principle. It makes complete sense. And, well, here. We wonder, you know, what did I do? Why did this happen to me? So, but we don't realize that what we did in the past, you know, we're looking in the future. Hey, I'm a good guy. But what we've done in the past, we'll get to it. You know? I mean, there's more to the science, but it's the basic idea. And we blame God. You know, why is, you know, God on his computer just waiting to... Actually, it's a very interesting phenomenon. If something goes wrong, we blame it on God. If something goes right, it's due to our keen intelligence and fine planning. So we always blame, if anything goes wrong, it's Krishna's fault. If anything goes right, we take full credit. But the fact of the matter is that, as we explained, as you sow it, so shall you reap. It's a very simple concept. Ishwar, the supreme controller, Krishna. Ultimately, behind everything is Krishna, the supreme controller. Krishna is the Adi Purusha. You know, this is the anthropomorphic idea. This is from Sistine Chapel, that I have a father. He's getting a little gray. My grandfather's got completely gray hair. You know, therefore, if God is the first father, the oldest, my father had a father, my father had a father, my father's father had a father. Adi Purusha, if I go to the original person, he must have a long gray beard and be old. And, you know, why? The Vedas say quite differently. Here it says, what is it? Advaita chuta manata manata anya purana purusham nava yovanam cha. Brahma Samhita says, although Krishna is the oldest person, purana purusham, he's fresh youth. Let me give you an example. How can the source of all beauty be, no offense to anyone who's old, I'm getting there, I'm also in the same league, how can the source of all beauty and life be a withered old man? Doesn't make any sense. One of our devotees jokes that, don't worry, Krishna's the same God in the Bible. He's just in a much better mood. He's not throwing thunderbolts and smiting and smoting. Suppose I opened out here and for the service of Rukmini Dwarkadish, Budri's pharmacy, and I sold old age pills. You buy this pill, you immediately become 90. Any takers? Anyone wants to sign up? But if I open up, you know, you take the pill, you become 20, I've got to, you know, I win the Nobel Peace Prize. So why should the source of all beauty in life be an old man? It is simply a mundane concept based on this picture of time. So Krishna, the supreme controller, is ever fresh, the source of all beauty. So these are, what else do we have here? So review, these five elements. Jiva, the living entity, Kala, time, Prakriti, material nature, Karma, work, action and reaction, Ishwara, the supreme controller, Krishna. So these elements should create a spiritual Vedic view of the world, a true pandit or learned person's view of the world. Now, here's another principle Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita. Conditions and consciousness. Now, looks great, doesn't it? I don't know about that, unless you're masochistic, but I'm not so enthusiastic about this. Prabhupada used to joke. They asked him, Swamiji, is there a heaven and hell in your Vedic view? Prabhupada said, for me, in India, the sun is always shining. And in England, it's always cold. So he said, for me, India is heaven, England is hell. Because he was in London. He was just, you know, they're very proud. So he was giving him a little tweak, you know. But I had a very interesting experience. I was flying in Krishna service from New York to Puerto Rico. Now, in the airport in New York, they had pictures of Puerto Rico, and they looked like this. You know, beautiful beach. There's always two pairs, you know, four footprints, two pairs of footprints, because no one likes to be alone. Actually, we always want some relationship. So, sunshine. And the caption said, going nuts in New York City. All this noise, all this chaos, so hectic. Go to the peace and quiet of the Caribbean. When I landed in Puerto Rico, before I even got out of the airport, big signs, pictures of the New York skyline. Going nuts on this little island with nothing to do. Go to New York where the action is. I swear to you. And I remember thinking, hang on a minute, you know. This place is telling me go there. When I get there, they're telling me go back. I said, you know, it's about 3,500. Halfway is Atlanta. Maybe 30,000 feet over Atlanta. Is that where happiness was? Because I missed it. It's not here. It's not there. And I didn't see it on the way. So the point is that we're all thinking that conditions will make us happy. If I just get the right conditions. Many years ago, before I became a devotee, I used to surf. And you have to have the right weather, you have to have the right wind, you have to have the right tide, you have to have the right swell, the right size, east swell, south swell, north swell, what is coming. You have to have the right break, reef break, you have to have the right board, you can't have too many people. All these factors. And anyone who surfs will tell you the famous mantra, should have been here an hour ago. Isn't it? Anyone who surfs will tell you that. Man, you should. It was great an hour ago. So if our happiness is... What is the Buddhist thing? Nothing is certain but change. If our happiness is depending on conditions, and conditions are always changing and not under our control, guess what? We have set ourselves up for an inevitable, inherent, perpetual disappointment. But if our happiness depends on consciousness, wherever we are, in any state, even we have seen great saintly persons at the time of death. When Prabhupada, the founder of the Hare Krishna movement, I have personal experience, was leaving this world. He actually, at the end of his life, he was fasting. There was no fatty tissue on his, you know, the skin was pushing right on the bones. An ordinary man would have been writhing in pain. One of my, a very good man I know, Dr. Karana, he's passed away, but he was a top doctor in Delhi. He went, and a very, very nice man, but very reserved. He got some fellow doctors, his son prevailed on him, please go see Prabhupada. We know Prabhupada's moving at his own will, but at least go see him. And Prabhupada had stayed at Dr. Karana's house in Delhi. So Dr. Karana and four or five other doctors all got in those little, I think you could get black or white ambassadors. Those are the two types of cars in those days. All drove down to Delhi. When they came in to see Srila Prabhupada, Dr. Karana told me personally, he said he was shocked. Because Prabhupada, you know, was like a lion. And then to see Prabhupada in his disappearance bed, practically like Bhishma Dev, with just an ordinary man would have been writhing in pain. Prabhupada asked him, oh, how are you? How are you feeling? How is your family? You've come all the way from Delhi. Please, told the devotees, find them some place to stay, get them for some prasadam, take some rest, come, I'm not going anywhere, come back this afternoon and we can talk. Dr. Karana began to cry. He thought, here is someone. I'm the doctor. I'm usually consoling the patient who's completely in anxiety. Here is someone who is completely free from any of this, completely beyond the bodily. He's inquiring how I'm doing. So and there's so many examples. If our happiness is consciousness, we're happy in any state. If our happiness is based on conditions, we're not happy anywhere. The spoon is in the soup, but does not taste it, Chanaka Pandit says. It works both ways. If we can be surrounded by happiness, but if we're not in the right consciousness, we'll be completely miserable. We've all know people like that. You've been in a spot, it should be a happy situation. They're complaining about this and that. My mother, who was a very good mother, I'm not criticizing, used to take us to the beach. And she would pack a picnic lunch. And we're all having a great time. She would complain how sand was getting in everything. And I remember thinking as a kid, well, hang on a minute. We're at the beach. How will there not be sand? You know, it sort of comes with the territory. So, similarly, if one's surrounded by difficulty, if one is in pure spiritual consciousness, simply depending on Krishna, one's free from all. Prabhupada said one time, you think you're sitting on the floor? I am sitting on the hand of Krishna. Busted. He maybe knew. They didn't hear the announcement. We'll let him off the hook. But the kid, bye-bye. Yeah. No, it's... You can't expect a kid to say it. It's too much. This is a story from the Panchatantra. Aesop's fables actually come from Panchatantra. This is the story of the blue jackal. The point is, behavior determines consciousness, and consciousness also determines behavior. According to our behavior, it will affect the way we experience the world. And also, according to our consciousness, that will determine the type of behavior we're attracted to. It's a works both ways, and we'll explain where I'm going in a minute. But here's the story. This is the story of the blue jackal. You see this blue jackal, he's sitting on a throne, and all the other animals are offering deep respect, even the tiger. The story is that a jackal, you know, jackals are scavengers, and they live on the edge of the village. So the jackal was scavenging, looking for something nice to eat, walking along a wall, slipped off the wall, and fell into a cloth dyer, and he fell into a vat of blue dye, deep indigo dye. And he thought, jeez, I'm a jackal. Everyone else already picks on me, thinks I'm a scavenger, and now I'm blue. You know, insult in the wound, insult to injury. So he slunk back to the forest in shame. But the animals had never seen such a beautiful colored animal. And they thought, oh, this must be some animal from the heavenly planets. And they began offering all respects. The jackal, being no fool, figured, I'll capitalize on this. And he became king of the animals. But, you know, jackals, according, you learn all psychology, human psychology, also jackal psychology is there in the Bhagavatam. They love to howl at the moon. It's irresistible. So as the moon began to wax fuller and fuller, it became very difficult for the jackal to control himself. Finally, it was a full moon, and he just couldn't hold back. He began howling. And all the animals realized, wait a minute, this is just a blue jackal, and chased him out. So the point is, his consciousness affected his behavior. Ultimately, he could not restrain himself. I think I've said before, when I first came to the temple, because yoga practice means yama and niyama. Do this, don't do that. I remember when I first came to the temple, I heard Srila Prabhupada say, I was vegetarian. I love sweets. What can I say? It's true. And the last thing I did was I gave up any baked goods because they have eggs in them. I can't eat them. You know, it's sinful. Poor animals. So, and I heard Srila Prabhupada say, in my dull hearing and Prabhupada's sweet Bengali accent, Prabhupada said, we have so many do-nots. I thought he said donuts. I thought he was talking about the Sunday feast. I thought, fantastic, I'm in the right place, you know. I stumbled in the right door. And then as I listened, I said, oh, wait a minute, he's saying do-nots. You know, we don't do this, we don't do that. But the fact of the matter is, if you can, why in yoga practice and in spiritual life, we don't do a number of things. I was teaching a devotee how to drive a car. How many things are wrong in this picture? Anyone who's driven with me, but that's another story. And the devotee said to me, you know, there's so many signs. Do I have to listen to all these signs? I said, whoa, whoa. I said, those signs are your friends. That sign that says, do not enter, we like that sign. You know, the sign that says, you know, red light, stop, that's our friend, you know. You like these signs. So if we accept we're bodies in motion, as I was describing, and there's laws of karma in this world, doesn't it behoove us? Don't do that. Do this. If you want to move safely down the road, I want to feel the unfettered freedom of the soul, fine, then don't get behind the wheel of a car. So Krishna's saying here, working senses superior to dull matter, mind is higher than senses, intelligence is still higher than the mind, and still higher is the soul. This is that same analogy we give, but just to drive it home. Krishna says it in another way. Material nature, we describe these three modes. Now we're going to talk, we're going to be done in a few minutes. But this is about the three modes of material nature, and you'll see why it matters. In other words, we probably like this saying, we are captains of our fate. We don't accept blind destiny, karma, and I'm just, you know, predestined and forced. No. Human form of life means that we have free will. And with that free will comes responsibility. We have freedom of choice. And how we choose, then is a result. So choose wisely. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, he becomes conditioned by these three modes. Prabhupada gives the example, because now you've got acid rain and so many things. But when the water comes down, it's pure in principle. And then when it hits the ground, it becomes muddy. So our consciousness is pure, but when it comes in contact with the material nature, these three modes, we become tainted by those modes. What are the symptoms? behavior and consciousness. If we know the behavior, if you know the symptoms of a disease, you can cure it. So if we know the symptoms of the modes and see them in ourselves, we have a choice. Just like we have a, well, I'll say it. You know, like in a game show, behind door number one, door number two, door number three, and you pick one and you get a cabbage, the other one you get a brand new Mercedes, you know? So if we look at these three modes of material nature, then you can determine, because these few verses are going to tell us, if you're in the mode of goodness, how you'll experience life. If you're in the mode of passion, how you'll experience life. And we can choose. Do I want to be in the mode of goodness? Do I want to be in the mode of passion? We can choose. And we should understand, if I act in that way, behavior, my consciousness will be in that mode. And the elements or conditions or nature of that mode, do I really want to be there? Therefore, if I don't want to be there, don't act that way. So that's what Krishna is explaining in Bhagavad Gita. So here's the mode of goodness. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness, illuminating and free from all sinful reaction. Mode of passion, unlimited desires and longing. Great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavor, uncontrollable desire and hankering. Mode of ignorance, delusion of embodiment of all living entities. Madness, indolence, sleep. That's the mode of ignorance. A little bit more, Krishna's summary. Mode of goodness, knowledge develops. Mode of passion, greed develops. Mode of ignorance, foolishness, madness, and illusion. These are all from verses in Bhagavad Gita. Now, what you eat. Food in the mode of goodness. Krishna says, increases duration of life, purifies one's existence, gives strength, health, happiness, satisfaction. Such food, you know, there it is. Nice foods in the mode of goodness. Food in the mode of passion. What happens? Bitter, salty, you know, and what's the result? Distress, misery, and disease. Choose the mode of passion, act in the mode of passion, get the result. Food in the mode of ignorance. What do they say in Bengal? They call a fish, oh, it is fruit of the Ganga. It is water vegetable. No. And an egg, some guy told me, oh, egg, it is Ram Ladu. No. Prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten, you know, microwaved, sitting on the shelf, dead for 20 years, add water, nuke it, woof it, and then wonder why you feel dull and get cancer. Prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten, tasteless, decomposed, putrid, consisting of remnants and untouchable things. Action in the mode of goodness. Action which is regulated, performed without attachment, without love or hatred. That means duty. Without desire for fruitive results. Mode of passion. Performed with great effort by one seeking to gratify his senses. Enacted with a sense of false ego, pride, arrogance. Food in the mode of ignorance. Performed in illusion. Disregard a scriptural injunction. Without concern for future bondage, for violence or distress caused to others. I saw a t-shirt the other day. I actually should have bought it from the guy. It said, instant idiot, just add alcohol. Action in the mode of ignorance. Worker in the mode of goodness, without false ego, determination, enthusiasm, without wavering in success or failure, as a matter of duty. Mode of passion, attached to the work of the fruits, desiring to enjoy those fruits, greedy, always envious, impure, moved by joy and sorrow. This is said to be in the mode of passion. Do we want to be there? If you don't want to be there, don't take up passionate activities. Food in the mode of ignorance. Please note, we all know this if you grew up in America, but what's he sitting on? Please note. We're all like that. Always engaged in work against injunctions of scripture, materialistic, obstinate, cheating, expert in insulting others, lazy, always morose, and procrastinating. Mode of ignorance. Determination, mode of goodness, unbreakable, sustained by steadfastness and yoga practice, controls the mind, activities, life, and senses. Determination, mode of passion. There it is. Hold fast the fruit of results, economic development, sense gratification. We all know where these guys want it. Where's his 401k now? What is that? Brett? Was that Madoff? What was his name? Barry Madoff? Madoff with everybody's money? You know, where does this stuff lead? Determination, mode of ignorance. Can't go beyond dreaming, fearfulness, lamentation, moroseness, and illusion. we're almost done. Happiness and the mode of goodness in the beginning must be just like poison, and in the end is just like nectar, and awakens one to self-realization. Most kids don't want to go to school, you know, every day. So, and they want to eat anything that's sweet or whatever, potato chips and Coca-Cola. Now, if I let, it's very sweet in the beginning. Don't go to school, eat anything you like. So it's well, we'll get there in a second. We'll finish the analogy. But what happens? Let them eat anything they want, don't go to school. But by the time they're 30, they're toothless, mindless idiots. It was nectar in the beginning and poison in the nectar in the beginning and poison in the end. That's happiness in the mode of ignorance. We're going to get there. But happiness in the mode of goodness, it requires some selflessness, some determination. It requires some, no, I may want, what, prayas and shreyas, the Vedas say. There's short-term benefit and long-term benefit. And someone who can put aside short-term benefit and look for long-term benefit, that's intelligence. Happiness in the mode of passion, derived from contact of the senses with their objects. Conditional happiness, we talked about. Appears like nectar at first, but becomes poison in the end. I'm sorry, that's happiness in the mode of passion. Looks good, but in the end it causes great bitterness. Happiness in the mode of ignorance, blind to self-realization, delusion from beginning to end, arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion. The drunk lying in the gutter, singing how happy I am, and says, can you give me $5 for another bottle of Ripple wine? He's unhappy now, and he's what he's asking for is unhappy. I mean, those are extreme examples. What's your excuse? Krishna describes, what's the driving force? The living entity's pure consciousness. Remember we said the rain coming down, and when it becomes contaminated, when it hits ground, becomes covered by lust, which is never satisfied and burns like fire. Simple example. Picture this campfire. Kids, don't try this at home. If you had a small fire, foot high, and you had a pan of gasoline, and you were to throw that pan of gasoline, gallon of gasoline, on a fire, two things are going to happen here. What's the first instant thing that happens when you throw that gas on the fire? No, it does not immediately burst into flames. I know by personal experience. What is the first thing that happens? It goes down. Because actually, I think the oxygen's cut off is what happens. So it goes down for a second. Hey, it's liquid. I threw liquid on the fire. The fire went out. Took care of that. Kaboom! It bursts into flame. So if we think like, we may be throwing, you know, we have some itch. Prabhupada says you have an itch and you satisfy it. So the senses are always agitated for something. And if you throw that sense object on it, you get a moment's relief, but it comes back stronger. Prabhupada said, he was joking, but it's a good point. Do you know how you get rid of an unwanted guest? You have someone who comes to your unwanted guest. Prabhupada said, don't feed them. They'll leave. Trust me, they'll leave after a while. So if we learn to not feed lust and false ego, it becomes controlled. Otherwise, you just throw more fuel on the fire and wonder why it doesn't go out. So the Krishna's explaining in Bhagavad Gita. We are conditioned since childhood. Gimme, 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 I want, I want. That's, you know, that just titillate my senses. You get, when you're a kid, you go to the doctor, they give you a shot in the rear end, and they give you a lollipop. Pain, stimulation. Oh, I guess I'm okay. And this way, it's a simple example, but we are conditioned from day one. The average American can remember under hypnosis over 575 commercial jingles. They asked Prabhupada one time about brainwashing. He said, if the brain is dirty, shouldn't it be washed? So if you think about all of those impressions rattling around on our mind, that we think that we're meant to be titillated, our senses satisfied at every moment, and that's the goal of life. No. Just a simple one. You know, people are talking about solving the environmental situation, but here we have burning wants, but what are our actual needs? To raise the entire world's population, everyone is chasing the American dream. They want to come. Of course, they've been shaken recently with the stock market crash. But the idea of coming to the American standard of life, the simple mathematics to bring the current world's population to the American standard of life would require the resources of 6 more planet Earths. 6 more entire planets just to give the raw resources to create a lifestyle of the American life. something has to give. But if you have, Prabhupada said, simple living, high thinking, if one's satisfied internally, then all these wants are reduced to the size of actual needs. That's happiness. So this is our last slide, but here you see at the end of Bhagavad Gita, here's Arjuna hearing from Krishna, clear vision how to live in this world. He's free from doubt and free from fear. So if we take up... Oh, I think I have another... Ah, here we go. What is the best welfare work? Here we see... Because everyone, if you have some compassion, you want to help. I've told the devotees this before, but because it's a Sunday feast crowd, new people. One summer, for 1 week, I was a volunteer on a suicide crisis line. They actually had a big bridge called Coronado Bridge, and people jump off the bridge. So they put a 1-800 crisis line. But the problem is we didn't have enough staff for it. So people would get ready to jump, call 1-800, is reaching out one last time for some human touch, and they'd be put on hold. You can imagine, all right, forget it, you know. So they had some volunteers, and I volunteered, trying to help. And they give you a little sheet that you read, and you can check the box. They say suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. You know, the problem is that whatever you're suffering from is going to change. And there's so many others. So you try to get them, here's an example. This man called. I answered the phone. 17 years old. What am I going to tell this guy? But there it is. So, and I was reading from my little sheet. I'm going to commit suicide. Well, but what about your family? Oh, my wife's divorced me and I haven't seen her in 30 years. Well, what about your kids? Oh, they all hate me. Well, what about your job? Well, I got fired. Well, what about your health? I've got cancer. He went down the whole list. He had nothing. I got to the end of my 10 things. I thought, where are I? I'll give you a push. You know? I felt badly. I felt like I can't help. I was so despondent that I can't really help this man. And even if I patch him back up, it's like in the ring, you know, in the boxing ring, the guy's just getting butchered. And he goes back into the corner and his trainer says, yeah, go ahead, you're a killer, put some ice on it, sends him back in the ring. Oh, jeez, the guy just... So you patch someone up materially without real tools of how to solve the real problems of life. We're just prolonging their suffering. So the best, well, here you see, this is from one of the pictures of our Bhagavatam. Here are people in the mode of ignorance and mode of passion. What is this world? And if here's Vyasadeva with the Bhagavatam shining the message of Krishna, the transcendental knowledge of Krishna. Krishna Upadesh. And here's just a few pictures of devotees. These are all spontaneous. Devotees who've actually taken these books, this Vedic knowledge, seeing through the eyes of Shastra, seeing through the lens of spiritual knowledge, and how they've become happy. Beauty from within. And we're not just picking on the ladies. This guy was outside. These are librarians. It's at the Santa Ana Public Library. They were so happy to get Prabhupada's books. This is the real gift. So, you know, we had Obama and change agents, and we wish him all good fortune. But the real change agents is transcendental knowledge and then the transcendental chanting. These are Japamala, chanting the holy name. If one, Prabhupada says, if you have to have fertile ground, and then you plant the seed, and the tree will grow. If we actually follow the principles of the Bhagavad Gita in our personal life, act in the mode of goodness, it's actually Sudha Sattva, purified goodness, and we add the holy name, the seed of the holy name, the fruit of Krishna Prema, pure love of God, it'll rise. So that's it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Our local, because we're a little over time, so I think we just roll on to what the next thing is. I know I'm up against prashadams. No, we're done. Thank you. All right, go take prashad, Prabhus. Hare Krishna. They've been sitting very patiently. I appreciate it. We're all right. Hare Krishna. I know my real value. I'm up against Prashadam. Thank you, though.
Please. My name is Denny. And Krishna really pulled me here tonight, and I'm so grateful. shall have passed at the end of his life. And so appreciated his saying that you personally attest to it because it gives me so much faith.
No, problem was on a humorous side, as far as there was a big problem. In the temple room, there was a big picture of this guru. And in his sitting room, when he was having his meeting devotees and guests, there was no picture of his guru. So he'd seen it, and he told the temple president, bring that picture of my guru Maharaj. So the temple president, a couple hours later, I was just a young man, young monk, and I was walking down the place, and said, hey, help me. So we picked up this big, big painting. And it was, probably 5 foot 5, a big gold frame. So we came into Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada was sitting at his desk. We thought he was out in the garden. So we said, oh, Prabhupada, I'm sorry. Go back there. No. We said, well, what do you want? That picture. So the temple president said, well, there's a picture behind you, but do you want to get up, Prabhupada? I said, no, no. Because he was right.